The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Oh, what a show we have put together for you today. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Coming up at 12:30, a very timely guest, former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, who was a reformer when it came to the tyranny of the teachers' unions in Wisconsin. And he successfully fought for the taxpayers. And the schools are in every bit as good a shape, but they got some financial reforms, and he stood up to the dangerous, dangerous force that is the teachers' unions in Wisconsin, in Washington, and everywhere else in the country. So we'll talk with Scott Walker about that. Also, I'm going to find out if he thinks Trump's going to be reelected. Remember, he was considered a possible frontrunner in 16 when Trump won the Republican nomination. But Scott Walker was one of those early guys that they thought might get some traction. So I'll ask him how he thinks Trump's doing with his party and who's going to win the Democrat nomination. So Governor Scott Walker joins us at 12:30 this afternoon. At 1:30, Dave Wyman's usual Tuesday visit. I'm heck bent for revenge because he beat me in Name That Artist last Tuesday. But we'll talk about Doug Baldwin, Cam Chancellor, forced retirements, and lots of other stuff. So Dave Wyman will join us later this afternoon. And coming up in just a few minutes, there are so many local property crime stories, but this one is one of the more heartbreaking that I've heard. And I'm going to talk with a victim in just about just 3 or 4 minutes here. But with all that as mere prelude, let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Our friends, our news partners at Cairo 7 News, they had obtained the exit interviews of Seattle police officers. And I will tell you, I've helped the little town, suburban town in which I live, I helped them voice a recruiting video because they're trying to attract cops. I talked to some officers at a large East Side police department, and they said, yeah, we're getting a lot of laterals from Seattle. People just want out of Seattle. And I don't blame them. You know, we told you about how disrespected they are. Nicole saw that firsthand when she did her ride-along this last weekend. You have again today. You have Keshama Sawant saying that she believes that Seattle cops just want to murder black people. It is so unbelievably irresponsible. I mean, this is somebody who needs to be out of office because she's making the job that is already just horribly dangerous because of horrible politicians like her, and she's making it even more dangerous. But we have a story up at My Northwest that Sawant, in a statement, claimed that black residents are targeted in deadly shootings. And are you wondering why cops, she's previously has called cops murderers. Now she says that they're targeting black people to be murdered. And she is ratcheting up the danger level to an incredibly destructive force. So, Cairo 7, they reviewed these cop exit interviews, and what they found out is that the cops just say they cannot work for these politicians in Seattle. And Lindsay Sheldon, the reporter at Cairo 7, asked Jenny Durkin if she's surprised about some of the feedback they're getting as cops are leaving the town in droves.
Were you surprised by hearing what was in these exit interviews?
You know, first, the most important thing I want every police officer to know is how much I, as mayor, and the city really value their service.
Bull crap. It's bull crap. When on the... Jenny Durkin is saying that on the same day that a member of her city council says that cops target black people to be murdered. That's not valuing police officers. And if you want to have any credibility, Jenny, you and anybody else with any bit of power and leverage, you should get someone who's that destructive out of office. And yeah, it might take a recall election, although she can be recalled in the regular election coming up. But the cops just don't want to be here. Kevin Stuckey is an African-American who's the head of the Seattle Police Officers Guild.
People get frustrated. They want to feel supported. And so they have to go into these other agencies. And we're at a crisis right now.
And he specifically cited Sawant's murderer comment.
The councilwoman is entitled to her opinion, but every time she makes a comment like that, it hurts our retention and it hurts our recruiting because they can go somewhere else and not have to deal with that.
But remember, it's all very purposeful. Sawant wants to destroy the city. She wants to tear it down. And in her twisted mind, she thinks that she's then going to rebuild a Marxist police department and a Marxist city. I mean, this is how delusional. This is my personal opinion. I believe there's some mental illness going on with Sawant, given that she takes her marching orders from that Marxist organization and that is their stated goal, is to tear the city down. So, Jenny, what about a solution?
I think we have to do a whole range of things. There's no one thing that will convince any employee they're valued. So it has to be long-term and sustained. And so we want to do a range of things. Number one, we want to show that when we hire them, we're going to pay them what they're worth.
Okay, so you're already paying more than most suburban cities. But for cops, it's not worth it. They got to deal with the types of crimes they have to deal with on a regular basis, and they get $8,000 more than somebody in a city that doesn't allow drug vagrants sleeping everywhere. The way of life in other cities is so much more valuable. And you know, out where I live, I know the cops. And they like our city council. They like our mayor. They feel supported. This in Seattle, it's unsustainable. So we've got a bad situation that's getting worse. And we have a complete failure of leadership at the very top. And then you want to hear, okay, and it goes far beyond Seattle. The property crimes, we have the worst property crimes. I have a story that I just heard about that it absolutely breaks my heart. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Big Local.
I know a little bit about father-daughter relationships. I'm so close to our three daughters. And one of the great joys is when you can share your faith with your daughters as well. And that's why I heard this story on Q13 News, and it just broke my heart. It's a story about a local young woman up in Everett. Her name is Lamaya Blackmore, and I'll have her help tell the story. She joins us here on Cairo Radio. Hey, Lamaya, thanks for coming on with me this afternoon.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Really good. I'm so touched when I heard your story and so angered, I guess, too. Tell my listeners a little bit about what happened to you the other day.
Well, I was just working at work like a normal day, and I took my lunch at around like 7:30. Everything's all fine. Locking up my car, getting all out of my work, then getting back into my work. And then I go back inside for about 3 hours, come back outside around 10:40, and noticed my car door was slightly cracked open, and my seat was leaned all the way back. And I normally keep my purse with my father's Bible and my sermon journal in there, stuffed completely underneath of my seat where it's not visible.
Okay.
But someone still had the audacity to go in and break into my car and just grab that one single thing that I held close to my heart.
Yeah, and tell me a little more about your dad's Bible.
So my dad's Bible, so the night that he passed away, me and my siblings were having a really tough time, and I could not be there anymore. So I grabbed my father's Bible And my mom says, go ahead, take it with you, took it home with me that night. And I looked in the back of the Bible, and it had a note that my father had written to my oldest sister in 1995, saying how amazing we were and how blessed he was that we were in his life. And it was just such a touching note that all of my family members forgot about. My oldest sister even forgot in the other note that she had written that to my father when she was of faith.
Okay.
So it's just the part that it was so memorable
yeah.
that it just, it sucks that it's gone and all I have is the pictures.
Yeah. And I know I heard on Q13 you read, I know you're in your car now so you can't read it, but here's you reading what your dad wrote in the Bible.
You and your sisters are the love of my life. I pray that you never get in trouble and that you never get hurt every day.
And you also shared with Q13 the final note from your dad.
I am in love with life because our father gave you to me. I thank God for you and my wife. Love, Daddy Bert.
Hmm. And you just lost your dad a couple of weeks ago, Lamaya?
Yeah, he died last month on the 20th, a couple days before Easter.
Okay. And so...
Yeah.
So and you work at a Red Robin, is that right?
Yeah, I'm a hostess and a to-go person there.
Yeah.
I've been doing that kind of business since I started my dad's catering business when I was about 10 years old. So it's just, it's kind of stuck.
So when you realize... what was missing, I can't even imagine, because I just talked on my show a few weeks ago about the material things that I've lost that I miss the most, and this certainly sounds like one of those that's just irreplaceable.
Let's just say the moment that I noticed that it was gone, I felt my heart break like I did when I, because I was a family member to find my father when he took his last breath. So it felt like that same thing, like something was just torn away from my heart again. And I screamed at the top of my lungs, who was in my car? And it echoed in the parking lot. I was so crushed. I was down on my knees in tears, just like, why would someone do this to me? I haven't done anything to them. It's not fair.
No, it's not. It's not fair. What's happening all around our region is just heart and soul crushing. What's your feeling about the person who stole that out of your car?
Honestly, I just hope they learn something, because also in my sermon journals, that journal had about 3 years of sermons from every Sunday. And I take very, very detailed notes. So I hope when they're reading through those sermons, they learn something and learn that it's something they should have not done. And I hope the Lord just touches their heart in a way to make it work.
Well, you know, and I would cling to that one because, you know, the likelihood is they were just looking for cash for their next drug fix and they just threw out anything that wasn't that. But what if that was the moment they saw something that made them pause and see some of those notes and see some of the word, and that's, mm-hmm. yeah. And like I said, I know that's a long shot, but in a moment of grief like you're having, it's probably more productive to cling to that right now.
Exactly. My mother actually put that in my heart because I told her how crushed I was and how it was taken from me. And she says, well, Lamaya, maybe they will learn something and maybe they could even pass it on. And your father would be happy because it's being passed on and people are all learning something from it. So maybe it's not in a trash can somewhere. Maybe it's being used the way it should be.
Yeah, I hope that's right. I really do. And
I really do, too.
Yeah. And I wish for you, not just wish, I pray for you, the very best in getting past this. I know that these crimes are happening all the time to way too many people. Mm-hmm. And I do these stories, Lamaya, because I want to remind our public officials and the people who vote for them that we cannot allow this to take over our streets to the extent that it has.
Exactly. That's honestly why I'm really so happy that all of you guys are reaching out and seeing my story, because I want people to know more too, because this is probably the third time my car has been broken into with multiple cars I've had. So that's why I'm just like, I'm done. This is not fair. I just want my things back. I want people to stay out of my car because I feel like I'm being violated. It's not fair.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's not fair. And we're going to all have to stop leaving things in our cars too, because
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
I emptied out my car completely, and I only keep what I need to keep in there. So I know it will never happen again. Like you saw on the news where I put, there's nothing left to steal in my dashboard. So then they see that note and say, well, I'll just stay out of that car. And I hope that some people will actually do that with their cars and put a note there.
Right.
And just try to stop crime with our cars getting broken into.
There you go.
It happens way too often.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing your story with me and my listeners. God bless you, LaMaya. And thank you for coming on with me this afternoon.
Yeah, of course. And I really appreciate your guys' reach out.
Thank you. Okay.
Amazing.
Take care. That's LaMaya Blackmore. She, yet another victim of the property crime that's running rampant throughout our region, this one up in Everett. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, big local.
And we continue to get national attention for the lawlessness on our streets. Last night on the second most watched cable news show, Hannity, they sent an investigative reporter out to Seattle to cover the homelessness disaster here.
We recently sent Fox News investigative reporter, our friend Lawrence Jones, to Seattle this time to investigate, well, what's going on in that liberal city? Let's take a look at liberal compassion in action. They're only generous with your money.
Then they just have a tableau of,
do you think,
tents and tarps and needles.
Seattle has a homeless problem?
Yes. I see it every day when I walk to work.
In the last 5 years, it's gotten steadily worse with the numbers of people actually living on the streets.
I'll play you a little bit more of that later on today. But yeah, the whole country knows that this is one of the worst run regions in the nation. And it's the shame of our politicians. And we will keep the heat on them. That is your Big Lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Ursula's going to check the news, and then I'm really looking forward to talking with former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, a reformer who actually fought for the taxpayers. Shocking concept. We'll see what he thinks about what's going on in our state. Next. Well, there are a lot of issues that we've been dealing with here in our state, and there's a really great person to give us some insights on some of these issues. He was the governor of Wisconsin. He's over in Spokane today speaking with the Washington Policy Center's invitation. Former Governor Scott Walker joins us here on Cairo Radio. Governor, good talking with you. I appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Well, the first thing that popped to my mind when I was told we had a chance to talk with you, we are in an education funding battle in this state, and you've been through something like that once or twice, haven't you?
Yeah. In fact, at one point, I always tell people I apologize. The Occupy movement didn't start on Wall Street. It happened on my street, first and foremost, when the protesters, not just the teachers, but all the other public sector unions and every other union in America seemed to send people in. They occupied our state capitol for about a month. But in the end, we prevailed. And for all the hype and hysteria back then, the schools in our state are the same or better. And the good news is the taxpayers and the people they duly elect are in charge, not the big government union bosses.
Well, let me give you, I'm guessing you're not as up on what's going on here in Washington. But let me give you a Cliff Notes version. Last summer and fall, school districts all across the state, very much coordinated by the teachers union, threatened to or actually did strike. They secured up to 20% pay increases that everybody knew were unsustainable. And now here we are, not even at the end of the school year, and school district after school district says that they now need new funding, even though we've increased school spending from $22 billion to $26 billion. And now they're saying it's still not enough.
This has become a nationwide trend. I was just in South Carolina and North Carolina last week working on some stuff with the balanced budget. And sure enough, I think in South Carolina, they'd initially asked for 3%. The legislature gave them 4%. And then they came back and held protest for 10%. With the unions, you're never going to get to a point where they say, okay, that's enough. And that's because the union bosses are the ones calling the shots. And you got to push back on it. There's plenty of studies out there that show that when you need to have a reasonable level of funding, that more spending, particularly in many of our urban school districts across America, doesn't necessarily lead to better results unless you have accountability in the classroom. And for most of these unions, they don't want to tie anything into performance, anything based on merit. And that's what we did, and that's why there was such a national outroar from the unions, because they know when you change a system so that seniority and tenure doesn't drive things, but performance actually drives pay, that's where they're fearful, because everybody's not going to get paid the same.
Well, and in effect, a school district that's a suburb of Seattle called Edmonds, they have a school board meeting tonight, and they are threatening to lay off now 45 teachers. They will be the first, second, and third year teachers. And from what I've heard from parents, from families, is that they are some of the absolute best, most enthusiastic, and some of the longer tenured teachers maybe don't still have that fire, but that has nothing to do with who gets capped. It's all about just
how long they're in the job. I wrote a book called Unintimidated, and there's a whole chapter with a story about a woman named Megan Sampson, very similar to what you just mentioned. She was named back in 2010 the outstanding new English teacher of the year for the entire state in Wisconsin. And that year, Democrats controlled everything. They had a budget crisis. They took it out on schools and local governments, cut spending. And so what did those school districts have to do? They had to lay teachers off. Who did they lay off? Megan Sampson. Why? Because under union contracts, the last hired is the first fired. The last in is the first out, with no regard to merit. And that's why, to me, long term, that's what's got to happen in this state and all across America. If you really want to have schools and governments that are more effective, more efficient, and more accountable to the public, you got to have the public be able to have a say in this, and not the union leadership be the ones driving it.
I'm talking with Scott Walker, the former governor of Wisconsin. I know one of the other things you're going to be talking about in Spokane today, and this has been another cause of mine, is the state wants to move from a gas tax to pay per mile. And I told my listeners about this 18 years ago because I got tipped off on a 20-year plan that would eventually make every road in the state a toll road. And it might cost you 10 cents to go to your neighborhood school. It might cost you $20 to go into downtown Seattle. I am certain that that is the plan that we're on. What is your take on the pay per mile plans?
Well, there's two concerns on that, particularly depending on the state. And this would be one here. One is just how you do that. We looked at that and had that debate in the past in Wisconsin. One of the concerns is just the privacy one of how do you actually account for that? How do you measure that? Because to me, I don't mind ideas of user fees if people use things, but the problem goes to the second point, and you see this particularly with the governor and others here, is it's one thing if you're using it to maintain or lower the overall burden. I believe all too often those on the left are advocating for changes or shifts or things like adding an income tax to say you're going to offset some other tax out there. What I've seen across the country is anytime a liberal says they're going to up one revenue source to lower another, what happens is they both end up going. And that's where you've got to be very, very suspect anytime people talk about new revenue sources if they're not actually talking about controlling spending.
Now, Jay Inslee promised me and my listeners on my show when he was campaigning the first time for governor that he would never raise taxes, and he's been at the helm of the four biggest tax increases in our in our state's history. He said he was going to do it just by job growth and efficiencies. Instead, it has been just a taxing spree around here.
Well, and the irony is, and those on the left, I mean, that's why he fits in well with the crowd, 20-plus folks running for president, because they all have that false mindset. What Ronald Reagan showed us with these latest tax cuts federally showed us, the president signed it, and what we've shown in Wisconsin and other states is we cut taxes by more than $8 billion, even got entirely rid of the state's portion of the property tax. And every year I've been in office, we've had a surplus. Why? Because when you put more money back in the hands of the hardworking people and particularly the small businesses that employ them, the economy grows, wages go up, more people are working, they pay more in. Revenues go up, not because taxes go up, but revenues go up because the economy continues to grow. And that's the real sense of how to do it, unlike the way Governor Inslee talked about it. When you raise taxes or you shift around and you try to tell people this shell game that you're going to raise one to lower the other, unless someone's committed to really the free market and to standing up for reduced spending, it's never going to happen. It's going to be more spending and more taxes and revenues out of the pockets of the everyday working people.
Well, and that's so clearly obvious to me. So, as I hear you describe that and you balancing the budget, you driving a surplus, getting the taxpayers more of their money back, how'd you lose a year ago?
Well, you know, it's funny. At the end of the my term, I was talking to the press corps, and someone asked me what I wanted to be known for. I said probably as a reformer. We did budget reform, collective bargaining reform, education reform, tax reform, welfare reform. And I jokingly said this, but there's probably some truth to it. I said, I may have reformed myself out of a job. All the things we said we were going to do, unlike so many politicians, we actually did them. In the end, the practical reason is two M's, Madison and marijuana. Our capital city is like to the left of, you know, Stalingrad. It's a very, very liberal city. And what they did was the liberals spent millions of dollars turning out college students by putting the other M, marijuana, a referendum on marijuana. Unlike Washington and Colorado, our referendum questions aren't binding. But they did it anyway to drive up turnout, and they said only the Democrats cared about this issue. And we actually got 34,000 more votes than we did 4 years earlier, and still we're about 1 point short.
Ah, okay. Real quick, just have a minute or so left here. Is Donald Trump going to win re-election in 2020?
I think he is. It's going to be razor close in a state like mine, and Wisconsin's probably one of those states he has to win. And he's got to define why the tax cuts are actually work, which he hasn't done thus far, even though they do. Most people don't know it. And he's going to have to define whether it's Bernie or Biden or whomever, that they embrace socialism. And he's going to have to make the case over and over again that socialism is failing around the world in places like Venezuela. He's going to have to burn that point in. And if he can, I believe most Americans don't want to go down that path. It's failed in places like Venezuela and Nicaragua and elsewhere around the world. They want to be down the path that's been winning for America for years and will for the next four.
Okay. Who do you think he's going to run against, Bernie or Biden?
I would say today it's Bernie. My gut tells me that Biden, I never thought there'd be a day where I would say that Joe Biden appears to be a moderate in that class of
yeah,
leftists.
Yeah.
But in the end, he may be amongst the left, he may be the most moderate of the bunch. And I think in today's Democrat Party, that is a crime far too great for most of those primary voters. They want someone who's as far left as they can get and who hates, the president, who hates anyone remotely aligned with them.
Yeah.
And that puts Bernie Sanders in the spot to win the nomination. And I wouldn't write it off just because he's a socialist. I wouldn't write him off because the one thing I do think voters appreciate, no matter where they come from, it's authenticity. One thing you can say about Bernie Sanders is he's authentic. He's authentically socialist, and he's lost his mind, but
right.
He is the real thing. And
right.
We're going to have to work hard to counter that.
All right. Great insights. Scott Walker, former governor of Wisconsin. It's really great having you on today. Appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. Enjoy your time in Washington.
Thanks.
Okay, there you go. Scott Walker, former governor of Wisconsin. Love to hear your thoughts. You can text me. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Look at that. At least one governor in the country will still talk to me, even if Jay Inslee doesn't seem interested anymore. All right, so we got lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. I promised I would play for you the latest example of how our region has become not a laughingstock. You know, people like Sawant are a laughingstock. But our region has become kind of an object of pity around the country. And, you know, as I was watching this story, Fox News has an investigative reporter named Lawrence Jones. And they sent him out to Seattle. I played you a little clip, but I'll play you more of his report now. But I was thinking, you know, when I was a little kid, the cities that we would look at as the sad examples of blight in urban America, it would be Detroit, Newark, New Jersey. Now it's Seattle, San Francisco, Portland. The liberal West Coast has become the, you know, like I said, object of derision around the country. So here's a little bit of what their investigative reporter found and the people he talked to as they were showing all of the rampant urban camping, what it is drug vagrancy, all around the region.
Do you think Seattle has a homeless problem?
Yes. I see it every day when I walk to work.
In the last 5 years, it's gotten steadily worse with the numbers of people actually living on the streets rising at an exponential number.
Would you say there's a homeless problem here?
Yeah, there is a homeless problem. It's a big-time homeless problem.
The music in this story stinks.
Describe to me what you see.
Tents on the sidewalk, debris and litter, like, everywhere.
I actually see a lot of marijuana smoke. I've found needles in the park.
I've seen heroin deals go down in my backyard, called the police, and they never showed up. They said there was just
no... You've seen drug deals in your backyard.
I've seen them heating up the heroin in a spoon in my backyard.
With all the tech companies coming to Seattle, do you actually think it's a money problem, or do you feel like the people that are elected here are focused on other issues?
I think, sadly, looks like they don't care.
But I don't think the city's really doing their job on. I think they're putting their efforts into the wrong place.
The big companies, Amazon, Starbucks, Microsoft, Boeing, even the small tech companies, could really do a little bit more community service.
Do you feel safe with all of this going on?
No. I try not to make eye contact, but I walk as fast as I can.
And this is the new normal.
Unfortunately, that's true.
It's a new normal here in Seattle and much of the Puget Sound area. And I disagree with the fact that it's up to Amazon and Starbucks to fix it. Because the reason we give a record number of tax dollars to our city, our county, our state, is so that they can provide law enforcement and safety and infrastructure. Law enforcement and infrastructure. And we are an absolute failure in both ways. We have some of the worst gridlock in the country, and we're seeing what's happening with the homelessness problem. But anyway, as I was watching that story, national news story, and I was thinking, if you had told me 40 years ago when I was still a kid in Ballard that this is how the nation's going to perceive Seattle, first of all, it would have broken my heart, as it continues to do today. But I wouldn't have believed it. I would not have believed that voters would put in such a succession of buffoons. Best of 15 is coming up next.